This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s brand new museum devoted to journalism and the news business. In the 1960s and 70s, CBS developed the best news department in the business. And while headquarters was in New York, in many ways the engine of CBS News was a remarkable collection of reporters, editors, and producers in the Washington Bureau. Many started their careers as newspaper reporters and moved to radio and television. Reporters like Daniel Shore and Leslie Stahl, Bob Schieffer, Dan Rather, Marvin Kalb, Connie Chung, and Roger Mudd. They covered the civil rights movement, the space program, the war in Vietnam, the assassination of one president, and with Watergate, the resignation of another. In a new book, Roger Mudd says the CBS News Washington Bureau was a TV news bureau the likes of which Washington had never known. Roger Mudd and Bob Schieffer join us in a moment to talk about the great days of television news and the less great days which have followed. If you'd like to talk with them about their work and the news business, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we'll, of course, take questions from members of the audience here at the Newseum. Later in the hour, cell phones are legal in Cuba. How's the reception? But first, Roger Mudd's new book is The Place to Be, Washington, CBS, and the Glory Days of Television News. He joins us here in the Knight Studio at the Newseum with his longtime colleague Bob Schieffer, chief Washington correspondent for CBS News and the host of Face the Nation. And welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil.
In the last week, we've heard that Katie Couric, the current anchor of the CBS Evening News, may opt out of her contract, and CBS News may outsource some production and reporting to CNN. Roger Mudd, the golden age you write about seems more distant than ever.
Well, it does, doesn't it? The reports about Katie Couric are all, of course, very iffy, but I think Bob knows as well as I do that rumors in the television business come true about 95% of the time if you wait. Just another week. The other probably more disturbing news from CBS was that they were considering outsourcing their news coverage. And if you read between the lines, you can imagine if they go through with that, what would be left would be Schieffer on Face the Nation, the 60 Minutes staff, mm-hmm. somebody doing the evening news, and somebody doing the morning news, and all the coverage would be supplied by CNN. And that would be the end of this marvelous news division from Columbia Broadcasting System. Be a sad end if it comes to that.
And Bob Schieffer, I have to ask you, at a difficult time for CBS News in the past, you were asked to fill in as the anchor of the CBS Evening News. If asked again, would you do it?
Well, I haven't been asked. So I think that would be a question that I would not want to discuss. Let me just say a couple of things.
You've learned something,
Let me just say a couple of things. The story about CBS outsourcing its coverage is not going to happen. There were some talks about sharing some resources in Baghdad, where we have a bureau and where CNN has a bureau. The talks ended. They were inconclusive. Nobody decided to do anything as a result. So CBS, as far as I know, is going to stick with its own reporters for as long as I know, for the foreseeable future. I think the idea of outsourcing the news is an idea that's not going to happen any time soon. As for the rumors that are going around, you know, and maybe it's because in the 60s and early 70s, because we were such a powerful bureau, CBS has always had a reputation, and I think Roger would agree with this. Sometimes we tend to make more news than we sometimes cover. It's just sort of a tradition at the place. And so I don't know what these rumors are about. These are things that people talk about in New York. We don't get much of that down here in Washington.
Can I interrupt?
Sure. Right ahead.
By just spiking the story about outsourcing, where'd you hear that? Who told you that?
Well,
did they tell
you
that before you came here?
No, but I mean, this is this is pretty much what we've been told inside the company.
Really?
Roger.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Roger, we do breaks at the 19 and the 38. I can go out and, you know, just leave this to you for a while. Part of the reason I think people, CBS is in the news so much is because people care about it, because for all those years, Roger Mudd, it was such an important part of people's lives for in the years that you describe. And one of the remarkable things about that is these voices and faces that we all got to know so well and that, well, I think we trusted in ways that I'm not sure anybody can be trusted these days.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say nobody can be trusted. it is true that in that 20-year stretch that I wrote about from 1960 to 1980, CBS became the dominant news network. NBC had been ahead from the late 50s with Huntley and Brinkley, and ABC was not even a factor. It was a weak third and became a real competitor after Rune Arledge came along and began to raid the other two networks. But during that period, beginning with the election of John Kennedy and ending with the election of Ronald Reagan, there was no group of men and women who so dominated the coverage from Washington. And during that period, official Washington, which had been used to being on a cycle with the newspapers, the 24-hour cycle with the newspapers, where the government shut down about 5 o'clock. With the rise of television, the government stayed open until 7 o'clock because they had to know what the networks were saying. That became the new deadline for the government to send out press releases.
You know,
it changed the culture a great deal.
What was interesting about those days is there were not nearly as many reporters as there are today. You had NBC and CBS, and there weren't even any national newspapers except for the Wall Street Journal in those days. The New York Times was not distributed on a national scale in those times. So household names were actually people who were covering beats in Washington, people like Roger, who was covering Capitol Hill, Marvin Kalb, who was covering the State Department, Dan Rather, who was our White House correspondent, Daniel Shore, who covered general assignments. And kind of up on cloud 97 up there above all of us was Eric Sevrod, who did the commentaries in those days. But because there were so few reporters, it was possible for them to become very well known, and I think that was one reason that had a great deal to do with the trust. Now you've got thousands of reporters out there. It's very, very difficult for people to become known, but the important thing and the real reason they became so well known and trusted is because they were so good. NBC, and Roger will remember this, they developed this great team of Huntley and Brinkley. But because Brinkley was here in Washington and did most of the stories coming out of Washington, they didn't really have it was hard for their White House correspondent to get on television unless the president went out of town.
If you were an NBC correspondent like Brokaw or Carl Stern, and you had worked all day on a story and had it ready to go, and at 5:45, NBC's producer called and says, "David's going to take that story." that was a real blow, and as a result, they never got a strong bench. Cronkite, of all the anchors, believed that reporters ought to do the reporting.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a question from a member of the studio audience here at the museum.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Ken Pitts. I'm from College Park, Maryland. Mr. Mudd, I listened to your conversation with Diane Rehm last month and discussing your controversial speech at Washington and Lee University in 1970. You commented that you don't believe your comments are really applicable to broadcast news today because of the variety, and that you also believe radio news is the last great hope for broadcast. But I'm just curious to know, what is your evaluation of the quality of broadcast television news today?
Just to summarize the speech at Washington Lee, in a few words, that the printed word would outlast the broadcast word. But go ahead.
I remember Diane's question. I think perhaps my answer, if she asked it again, would be a little different. I think in broad outline, I think the answer still stands, that there's been no change in television news that would in any way rival the contribution of the printed word. But beyond that, what's happened since television was deregulated in the late 70s and early 80s is that we have gone from 3 channels to 5 to 20 to 100 to 500. And the pie that used to be sliced up in 3 or 4 pieces is now little slivers. And everybody is trying to hold on to their audience. And that means that that pie has to be sweetened. So as a consequence, the coin has been devalued. And there's not any longer, at least in my estimation, the quality that used to be there back in the 60s and the 70s. Everybody knows what's already happened when they get home at 6:30. And as a consequence, the presence of the Internet and iPods and iPhones and wireless this, wireless that, means that the evening news broadcasts on the commercial networks have had to sort of reinvent themselves. So now what you get is maybe 8 minutes of news right at the very beginning, and the rest of it is features. So there's no place you can go on American television in the evening or at any given time during the day and find out what has happened, what significant has happened in the last 24 hours, because it's so diverse. Sorry for the long answer.
We just heard mention of Eric Severide, the longtime news analyst at CBS News. In his book, Roger Mudd tells the story of an editor named Peter Sturdivant, who edited Eric Severide's copy on his first day and learned what he describes as the 4 rules of Severide. 1, never talk to Eric at the urinal. 2, never talk to Eric in the hall. 3, never talk to Eric in the elevator. And 4, never talk to Eric. The book is filled with stories like that. We'll hear more of them when we come back from a short break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guests are Roger Mudd and Bob Schieffer. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting from the Knight Studio inside the Newseum in Washington, D.C. We're talking with CBS Chief Washington Correspondent Bob Schieffer this hour, as well as with Roger Mudd, who covered for CBS News everything from the Kennedy funeral to presidential campaigns. Here are a few excerpts from his reportage over the years.
And so this stately, magnificent, majestic funeral procession has passed the Lincoln Memorial across the Potomac River toward the final resting place of our 35th president.
So you do not agree that in the Haynesworth and Carswell matters, the Senate reached its independent judgment?
I think the Senate received the worst snow job of any legislative body in history. I assume that they read the proliferation of material that descended on them each morning from the liberal media. And I think they were affected by it. I think they were snowed.
He is out of it altogether. This leaves the Democratic nomination up to Robert Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy. The president is no longer a factor. What I'd rather do, Dan, is go home and come back tomorrow morning and begin to talk about it.
Well, I think we all would rather. It is a stunning moment, and for those of you in the audience who may be saying, well, those two fellows are having a hard time coming up with something to say, that's the truth of the matter, because it did come as a distinct surprise.
Why do you want to be president?
Well, were I to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, there's more natural resources than any nation of the world. There's the greatest educated population in the world, the greatest technology of any country in the world, the greatest capacity for innovation in the world, and the greatest political system in the world.
That was Roger Mudd reporting on John F. Kennedy's funeral, speaking with Vice President Spiro Agnew after the Senate did not approve Supreme Court nominations for Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell, reacting to President Lyndon Johnson's surprise announcement he would not seek re-election, and asking Senator Edward Kennedy why he wanted to be president. Of course, we would have run a Bob Schieffer montage, too, but around here he's still considered competition on Sunday mornings. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is Chad. Chad with us from Concord in Vermont.
Hi, this is Chad. I'm from Concord, North Carolina.
North Carolina, excuse me.
I just had a little story for Roger. My sister, she was at Woodstock, and she always tells this story when people get around. She said Roger Mudd was there. And what happened was he was there interviewing people at Woodstock. And as they started interviewing the group that she was with, of course, they were all smoking marijuana at the time. And he would begin interviewing the person in front of her. And whatever that person would say, as he would go down the line and interview each person, they would say the exact same thing. Roger, do you remember that?
What's your sister's name?
I don't think you would know her name.
Well, I the way you describe it, I probably was in no condition to remember it. But I do not. It was really Dan Rather, and if he wasn't there, it must have been Mike Wallace.
Oh, well, it must not be true then. Maybe they were smoking a lot of it at the time, apparently.
There was Mudd at Woodstock, but maybe not Roger Mudd. Thanks very much for the call, Chad.
You're welcome.
Let's go to a question here in the studio.
Thank you. Hi, T.J. Miller. I was wondering, to follow up on your comment about the news being sliced into progressively smaller and smaller pieces of the pie, as it were, I'm wondering, what is television news responsive that we have gotten to this? Who decides what really is a story, and as we descend further and further, what's the remedy? Is it something a la CBC or BBC where there's a regulatory input, and goodness, if this government's going to do it, that scares me even further.
Well, it would scare me. Not to dodge your question, I've been out of the network loop for 4 or 5 years now. I think Bob is probably up on how decisions are made short answer for me is I don't see much of a very bright light ahead, everybody says, well, write your congressman. That does not work. It does not work, and I don't know what to tell you, and the only answer I have is that the only light that shines for me as a consumer now is the news hour on PBS. You don't get a newscast, but you get a good discussion of the issues.
I would just say, I mean, it's not that somebody's trying to do this. I mean, we're dealing with a situation here where people are literally bombarded with news 24 hours a day. There's so much information that we're being bombarded with from all sides that sometimes it's like elevator music. There's so much of it you don't hear it. The great problem that journalists have, both newspaper reporters and television and radio and broadcasters, is trying to break through this great maw of information out there and tell people what we really do believe is important. Roger's exactly right. The evening news programs, we now believe that when people come to the television to watch the evening news, that they already know what the news is. They've gotten it somewhere. And the job of the evening news is to tell people a little more, to give them a summary of what you think is the most important things that have happened that day, to try to add some context and some perspective to it. But the great problem we're facing here, and nobody knows what the primary medium for where people will get most of their news is going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Will you get it downloaded on an iPod? Will you get it out of a newspaper? Will you get it off television? The only thing that we know for sure is that people are going to need accurate information. Exactly what medium they're going to get it from, we don't know. So the role of the journalist will remain the same, but whether they're going to print it on a different, something different than we know about, Is it going to everything going to come out of the same appliance? Nobody can give you the answers to these questions now. It's the internet that has changed things more than anything else. Because on 9/11, for example, we spent most of our time correcting false reports that had popped up on the internet. It was always traditional in journalism that if you make a mistake, it's your responsibility to correct it. If your competitor does, we used to wait, ignore it, give them a chance to correct it. We couldn't do that on 9/11 without running the risk of setting off mass hysteria. And that is the great problem for journalists now, is how do we deal with this constant bombardment of information that not only are our viewers and listeners and readers getting, but that we're getting as well.
Let me add just one thing and ask you all a question, or I'll put a question. Who is responsible for the decline of television news? Is it television news managers, or is it the public? And I cite these two statistics. 30 years ago, the combined audience of the three network newscasts was 52 million. Today, it is 27 million. Today, American Idol has an audience of 27 million. Now, who's driving that, us or you? I think both are participants.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Darren. Darren with us from American Falls.
Yes. First, Neil, I wanted to mention there is one place I think left for great, honest news coverage, and that's on National Public Radio.
Well, thank you for that.
And it's very comforting to hear.
See how that caller got
through. I love to hear Walter Cronkite, Daniel Shore, and Mr. Koppel that are all now contributors. I think it's exactly where they belong and should be. But just my question for your guest today is, what role do you think the declining euros in print media will have on the visual media? And I'll take my response off the air.
Thanks very much. Bob Schieffer, what do you think?
Well, the declining bureaus, is that what he says?
And also the newspapers, many jobs.
The problem for newspapers these days is not so much the journalism. It's finding the sources of revenue to be able to pay for these very expensive enterprises. You know, we talk about bloggers going to take the place of newspapers and all of that. Bill Keller, who's the editor of the New York Times, tells me that they spend $2.5 million a year just on the security that they have to keep their bureau in Baghdad open. Now, that, you know, on top of that comes the reporters' salaries and transportation to get them around and all of that. Newspapers have simply got to find some way to generate the revenue to keep these very expensive things like operating bureaus overseas going. It's not so much the cost that it, you know, at 60 Minutes you can pick out the stories you want to do. But if the evening news is going to be a good broadcast, it's got to be ready to cover the stories that are unexpected, and that's where the great costs in. And with the coming of the internet, when people don't advertise cars in the radio anymore, when the one-ad business has gone away, that's the problem that newspapers are having right now, and to some extent television,
well, you remember
mainstream television as well.
You remember, Bob, 30, 40 years ago, CBS and the other networks had bureaus in London, Paris, Bonn, Rome, Moscow, Tel Aviv, Tokyo, and now they're down to London, maybe Tokyo, Baghdad. And most of the coverage out of Europe is voiced over by a reporter who's never left his office in London. He's looked at the film and written the script and listened very carefully, and he'll say his name, CBS News London, and he's talking Moscow footage.
Just to our office used to be right across the street from the CBS Washington Bureau on M Street here in Washington, D.C. I remember there was a day of a tremendous snowstorm, and I was at home in New York coming down to Washington to produce All Things Considered that day, and it took me 5 minutes to realize you were shooting across the street into my office because the snow was piled so high. But we used to look across the street with envy at this organization that could keep all those bureaus. We had, at that time, one person in London, Robert Siegel, at that time, and it's just the change has been extraordinary. The fortunes have really changed around. Anyway, let's go to the audience here at the museum.
Hi, how are you today? My name is Fatima Blackwell. I'm from Virginia Commonwealth University. I have a sort of two-part question, but my first is, Mr. Mudd, have you been a part of the news leader in Richmond, Virginia, by any chance?
Yeah, the late lamented Richmond news leader, an evening paper, and I started there fresh out of graduate school. I wanted to work for a newspaper because I had written my master's thesis on Roosevelt and the press. And thought I'd better get, yeah, I was there. It wasn't very good. This was 1953, I was the slowest typer in Eastern Virginia, and my big fingers didn't fit the keys, and the woman I replaced, who was on maternity leave, had her baby, and they said I could go now.
It was a short assignment. My main question is, with convergence and kind of fast-paced technology, we've been sort of gearing towards that in terms of radio being the hope for news, sort of not broadcast, but news. What do you believe the news going to look like in maybe 2012 and then maybe, you know, over a span of time gradually up until maybe 2050 when we're like, well, you know, what is this going to – I think it's going to be scary, but what's your opinion on that?
Well, Bob took a crack at it, and he didn't do any better than I would, which is we don't know. We really don't know. That whole world is in such tumult, and every year, every month virtually brings a new development that there's just no way of predicting what it'll be like. You mentioned convergence, which was a major fad. I always think of it as a fad, where when a newspaper owns a radio station and a TV station, the reporters, in effect, co-mingle, and they use each other's report. A newspaper man will file his piece, but then he'll do a radio version of it and even do television. I don't know whether that's working or not. The firsthand experience I've had with it was in Florida, and I don't think it was a success because I think there is a built-in, it's not an animosity, but there is a slight confrontational feeling between television reporters and newspaper reporters, one looking down on the other, and I'll not tell you which looks down.
Sort of saw that at the Times-Dispatch in Richmond, kind of
Did you? Yeah.
Video as well.
We should point out Roger Mudd would have continued in the newspaper business had a radio station not offered him $5 more a week, thus a broadcasting career was born.
But what is happening is that all of these entities are competitors. You know, the newspapers, the television, and now the web, the radio, they're all competing for the same sources of revenue in order to pay for these very expensive operations that they have. And there are so many more of them that's why nobody really knows. Roger talked about have the changes come about. Is it the people in television or is it the public that is causing the great changes that are going on? But the driving factor here is the technology. The technology is just moving so fast that nobody knows what the next chapter of this is going to be and how you're going to pay for it. There used to be a lot of these bureaus, but now with so many different entities competing for the same advertising dollar, it's much harder for any of them to finance these very expensive operations.
Say hello to him in Richmond, Ms. Blackwell.
Thank you.
Let's get Tom on the line. Tom with us from Shelter Island in New York.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Now, I just wanted to say this is a great show, and I'm so happy to listen to two reporters who I grew up with in the 60s. I was 14 when John Kennedy was shot, and I just think that everything that I've listened to of any importance has been uttered by either somebody in the audience, I mean, either Bob or Walter Cronkite. And I wanted to just say...
You might have tossed Roger Mudd a bone there, you know?
I'm sorry about that. I just wanted to say to Bob that my wife and I went on a road trip one time, and we listened to your entire book, This Just In, on the trip, and I think I've never had a more enjoyable road trip by listening to your book.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I mean, when somebody tells me they have read my book, and I'm sure Roger would probably agree with this, his book is just out, that is just the greatest compliment. People say, I found something, and I wonder about this, Roger. People will say, I saw you on TV. Oh, you did? What did you see? Well, I remember I saw you on TV. and then people say, I heard what you said on the radio. And my general feeling is that people pay more attention on the radio. But when they say they've read your book, that means they've spent a lot of time. And to me, that's the thing that means the most to me. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Tom. And our thanks to Roger Mudd and Bob Schieffer for being with us here at the museum today. Roger Mudd's new book, The Place to Be, Washington, CBS in the Glory Days of Television News.
It's really good, too.
Coming up in Cuba, Raul Castro has instituted some changes. You can make phone calls there now on a cell. We'll talk about it. This is NPR News.